Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Academic Life channel here on New Books Network. I'm your host, Dr. Dana Malone. Today, we'll be talking to Dr. Anna Sharp, Associate Dean for Student Success at Berry College in Rome, Georgia, and we'll be talking about the role of failure in student success. Anna, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dana, it's really good to be talking with you.
Thank you so much for coming on. I'm really thrilled to have you. Anna, I wonder if you could begin by telling us a bit about yourself.
Sure. So I grew up in a relatively rural part of Georgia, close to St. Simon's Island, Georgia. So that's what people know. But I grew up on the mainland. So had a great experience of that. Went to college and faced some challenges myself. So I'll talk about those a little more in just a minute. But after graduating with my undergraduate degree in creative writing, I worked for a year and really discerned what I wanted my next steps to be and decided to get a master's in literature. And during that time, I had the really great fortune, Dana, of meeting you and some other folks, at University of Kentucky and had an amazing, really formative experience there, sort of clarifying, you know, my internal sort of compass for how to do the work of student support. So really calibrating that compass. Maybe that's a good, good metaphor. Completed my master's there and then went on to get my PhD in human geography. So during that process, while I was in the process of completing my PhD, my family and I, we moved to Rome, Georgia to begin our work at Berry College. And so, as you said, my role now is Associate Dean for Student Success, but this is my third role here at Berry College. And so I've really been able to serve in a lot of different ways, from, you know, really grounded, you know, work with students every hour of every day, to a little bit of a different experience that I'm having now, which is really working with an incredible team of full-time staff members, working with faculty to help chart a course for student success here at my current institution.
Great. Thank you. And as listeners are probably familiar at this point, I do always like to, and you alluded to that, we do know each other. I do like for listeners to know when I'm bringing someone on that I know and that I have a relationship with and have worked with. And so, as Anna said, we met many years ago at the University of Kentucky when she was a master's student and I was a doc student. And we worked, and I've shared this before, I've had other people on even from that unit. We had such a wonderful team there, and everyone has kind of gone on to do such wonderful work in the field. We worked for the academic support unit together for the University of Kentucky, and we were graduate TAs together working. We were teaching a course actually geared towards students who were in academic jeopardy. And that was just a super fun time, and we learned so much. And that was a great course that we got to teach, and really a model in the field. And Anna is, I always say that I admire her prowess as an instructor, as a teacher. She guided me as well when I was kind of thrown into I had to teach a writing workshop, and Anna was kind of teaching me as I was teaching my students, because writing was not my content area at the time. And so, yes, we have worked together for many years and have stayed in connection and are friends. And she's doing great work at Berry. And we have talked about this topic many times over the years. And so I thought, man, this just seems a very good time to be having this conversation and where we are in the world and where a lot of students are, and even faculty and lots of us in higher ed. So that's a little bit of history with Dana and Anna. So I'd like to move on and ask you, what inspired you to get into student success work?
Oh, geez. Okay. So my first semester of college was a debacle. I think that's probably the best way to describe that. And I can say that and laugh about it now. But certainly at the time, I was very much feeling the pain of challenge, of struggle, of some failure. You know, I hadn't put nearly enough thought into deciding what was the right institution for me. What sort of college did I want to go to? I certainly didn't know the difference between, you know, a regional state college, a research institution, a private liberal arts college. You know, many students, aren't aware necessarily of those categories as they're choosing an institution. But I genuinely, Dana, when I say I didn't think about it, I just leapt in, which is a little bit the person I am. But it was not a wise decision for me. I was a first generation student, and I didn't have the language or the frameworks I needed to ask the right questions and really evaluate colleges based on my own goals, my own needs, what I wanted to get out of the experience of going to college. I just didn't have that. So anyway, I jumped right in. I ended up at a huge state school. And when I got there, I realized, oh, I don't have any money. I felt this pressure, this need to keep up with the girls on my residence hall. And that was very much something I imposed on myself. I wasn't in a place financially where I could participate in Greek life. I couldn't shop in the downtown boutiques. I didn't even have a cell phone for the first couple of months of college. And in 2005, that was really unusual. and the money I did have, I was getting, very small allowance from one of my relatives. And the money I did have, I totally mismanaged it. I could have done a lot better, but I used it instead to try to do the things that I saw other people doing instead of doing the things that were right for me. So I made some bad decisions. And so, ultimately, though, I didn't make friends. I was lonely for the first time really ever in my life. I was lonely, and I didn't know even how to name that or face that, let alone fix it, right? So, on top of that, I had always considered myself a really good student. And for the first time in college, I was being challenged academically. I assumed college would be a breeze, just like high school had been, and it was not. It was really tough. And I felt like a failure on every front. I was at this big state school where, many of my friends would have killed to be there. And I was miserable. I was like eating tuna alone in my dorm because I was too lonely and embarrassed to go to the dining hall. I didn't have money to eat out. It was a really, really negative, first semester. And much of that was really, my own failures, right? My own, missteps as a young adult. And, I use that term with myself to describe my experience and with others without stigma, right? A failure doesn't imply that I didn't care about my academics. I just wasn't being successful at them at the time. I didn't have the tools that I needed and didn't know how to ask for them. That's quite the tale, I know. But that is why I got into this field, because, I left that institution. I transferred to an institution that did meet my needs a lot better. And the first, I stayed there for a semester and I got my footing, right? I sort of, took this moment. I actually moved back to my hometown and went to a small community college and just sort of reestablished myself and, frankly, reestablished my GPA. And then I moved on to a regional college that, was a great experience. And when I got to that regional college, I knew that the experiences I had shaped me in some way. I wasn't really able to certainly articulate that yet, but I knew I had figured some stuff out in the meantime. And so the first thing I did was find their student success center. And I said, hey, I don't know how to do a lot, but I know how to write. Are you looking for writing consultants? Because I knew that if there was some way that my struggles could serve others, right? That I could use some of what I learned, and spread that around, or be someone who even just walked with someone through their own path of struggle, to be there. That I wanted to do that. I wanted to do that. And so, I did that as an undergraduate, as a writing consultant. And then I worked, you know, doing that, as you said, at the unit at University of Kentucky. And I've made my career in doing that now. It's very, very close to my heart. You know, and if, you know, I'll add to that, that I think what that probably means for the way I approach my work in this conversation is that, you know, I don't come to this conversation about failure or resilience dismissive of the experience of failure, the pain of failure. You know, certainly there are a lot of people who face, you know, many more profound barriers and struggles than I did. But, you know, I certainly, you know, I didn't become an administrator because I did everything perfectly and right and just want to share my recipe for success with everyone. Because look how, no, it's quite the opposite. I know what it is like to feel defeated, to take a huge hit to your sense of self-efficacy. And I do, I want to walk with students to the other side of those experiences. Because really that's, you know, that's where those pivotal moments happen when you're coming through, those challenges, those failures, and that, you know, that adversity, you know, and I value what I gained from that, the challenges I faced, you know, not just then, but the other times. Dana, you were an incredible support as I went on my really extended and circuitous journey to finish my PhD. And I'm not saying I'd want to go back and live through any of those tough times again, but, you know, I've reflected on them and come to a place where, you know, I can have an appreciation of those experiences and what I learned from them, even as I regret a bad choice, right? Or even as I lament a negative situation that I was in, I still have, this distanced appreciation of having, you know, been through it. And I know you have questions for me, but
It's great though. It's great to hear your story because I know and I've seen you do this work. I worked with you in different settings. I've worked with you at University of Kentucky. We've collaborated with the work you're doing at Barry.
Right.
And so I've seen firsthand the way that you do that. You bring your whole self and your life experiences and your experiences as a student to your work. And I think that makes it very effective and authentic. And I think that resonates with students, which is especially so important because most of the students, you know, that you're working with or that we've worked with in the past together are struggling. They are struggling. They're in a low point for themselves. So that gets us into this conversation. And as we kind of start to dive in, I was hoping you could speak to how you see the role of, quote, failure in student success generally. And I use quotes around failure because part of this conversation is redefining how seeming failures are conceptualized, right? So so I just like to hear you kind of speak to that a bit of how you see the role there.
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing I'll say is failure is normal. Right? Failure is a very normal and okay part of the full human experience. You know, I think for a very long time after the spectacular failure of my first year of college, I spent a lot of time avoiding failure as much as possible, and being very concerned about failure because I felt like I really had to prove myself. I had to prove it to myself that I could do this, right? And that was such a mistake because, you know, as I tell my students all the time, if you're not failing, right, you're not pushing yourself, you're not challenging yourself, you're not trying new things, it's okay to fail. I think, you know, design thinking has done a great service to the concept of failure, right, with this idea of fail fast, right, fail lots of times so that you can figure out the right way to do it. And, you know, certainly in college, the stakes are incredibly high. And, you know, students feel this pressure to be successful. And you know, I hope that we'll get into this, but I really do believe that it's the role of institutions to create room for some healthy failure, for our students, because it is, again, it's okay. And if even the implicit message to students as they come to college is be super careful not to fail ever, 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 then we are not setting them up for success as professionals, as adults, as parents, as partners, as members of faith, right? Whatever they all the things that they go out to be when they leave us here, and all the things they are while they're mm-hmm. here, right? If that is our message to them, as they go out and be and do those things, well, we're not doing a really great job of educating the whole person, right? So yeah. I think failure is a normal part of the human experience, and thus is a normal part of the college experience.
Yeah. And so, yeah, to kind of, you know, get into this a little bit more and the parts that I know you really want to unpack a bit, let's talk about resilience. So resilience is kind of a buzzword of sorts when it comes to these conversations, and we've talked about it many times over the years in relation to student success specifically. How do you define resilience in your work, and how does it get mobilized in practical ways in the academy, if at all?
Yeah, well, you know, I think, I'll say and lift up the great work of Carol Dweck. You know, her work has really, I think, done so much to bring a vocabulary around resilience into the academy, and mm-hmm. into, you know, pedagogy workshops for TAs, into professional development for faculty. I mean, I think that that is certainly one way to frame resilience, right? This, the power of yet, and the ways that she frames mindset. I think, you know, those are really important and valuable. You know, if I'm thinking about how I define, you know, resilience to students and faculty, even just at my own institution, I find myself often reminding them, you know, resilience is it one part coming back from a challenge or a failure? Absolutely. But that bounce back, that comeback, that is not magic, right? That is hard work. That there's a lot of hard work that goes into turning a challenge or a failure into an opportunity to demonstrate resilience, right? That's not a one-to-one like mm-hmm. ratio, right? So, you know, I as an institution, we cannot gloss over that hard work that comes into play between, again, a challenge and a failure. And okay, I demonstrated resilience in this moment. Because that, you know, that's where, as you said, that's where we operationalize resilience. Normalizing it is, you know, as I said before, you know, saying every chance we get, okay, this is a normal part of the student experience, the human experience, and, you know, really putting our money where our mouth is, in higher ed with that. But then also, you know, really teaching students the skills they need to turn a challenge and a failure into an opportunity to be resilient. And I'm happy you would talk a little more about just maybe some of the ways I'm doing that, or I'm seeing that being done. Is that a good direction?
Yeah. Cause we've talked about that before, and that's where I really wanted you to go with this is,
okay.
You know, we've talked about what that looks like for student affairs and how student affairs, I think we are doing a pretty good job with that. But then on the academic side of the house, perhaps not so much. So yeah, I would love to have you kind of expound on your thoughts on that, those pathways back from academic failure.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. You know, the academic side of the house, I really do. I think we have some work to do. You know, if we believe, as a field of higher ed, that, you know, failure is a normal part of the human experience, and that resilience is a trait we should be building in our students, then we really have to show up for them with pathways, you know, back to academic good standing, right? When they've had some failures in a semester, right? Policies like academic amnesty and academic bankruptcy, you know, the COVID pandemic, I think really got many of us in higher ed thinking about, you know, SU grading, right? Many institutions implemented that during lockdown, even in the first semester back last fall. And, you know, really looking at the ways that that SU grading sort of built in grace, you know, built in grace for what our students, you know, were going through, even while still, you know, assigning them, you know, a grade that they had earned, right, an S or a U, but again, building in some grace. And so I absolutely think on the academic side, we should be thinking, you know, really creatively about how to build in some space for failure for students, right? You know, that might also include, you know, some space to rethink things in the course of a semester, right? If a student finds themselves in a class and not being successful in that class, right? Do we want them to be resilient in that moment? Well, absolutely we do. We hope they're going to walk into our learning center or work with a consultant, right, to build the skills they need and really be able to have like a comeback story even within the space of the class. But that's not always even mathematically possible, right? Or maybe that's not where a student is, you know, with their health and well-being makes that, you know, not possible at that moment or other circumstances in their lives. And so, you know, even in the course of the semester, students are, you know, making the important decisions to withdraw from courses. What supports are available for students to make sure they remain full-time students, remain engaged with our colleges and our universities? There's a lot of room there to think creatively and to be nimble and to try some new things. And that's something that, you know, that I'm excited to be thinking through at my institution now. You know, and on the student side of that, right, we need to sort of stop and take stock of the opportunities we have as an institution or, you know, as a college to speak in to how students frame success, failure, resilience, right? So those first year seminar courses, you know, those are a really important opportunity to help students frame these things productively really early, right? But before they even maybe realize they need some great framework around this, you know, building skills like reflection. Oftentimes when a student is coming to me, and as you mentioned, Dana, you know, I have the honor of walking with students through some really difficult moments. And sometimes when students are in my office sitting across from me, I can tell that even just talking back through a really disappointing exam grade is painful, right? That's not usually a failure that's going to derail someone's academic career, right? One test grade. Mm-hmm. But for a student, right, who has always wanted to be a physician, you know, one really upsetting, right, or disappointing exam grade in a gateway course, a biology course, a chemistry course, can really shake their confidence, their sense of self-efficacy, in you know, in an area that you know, they've really maybe constructed even an identity around being good at this, right? And so when that's the case, students, again, very understandably sort of shrink from reflecting on that experience, right? Because it's painful. It's not something they want to spend time thinking about, right? But reflecting on, okay, all right, how did I approach this, right? How did I prepare for this exam? What were the things I did? Okay, looking at my exam, what served me well? Okay, what doesn't seem to have served me well? What was the experience of taking the exam? Was I nervous? Did I feel prepared? Was I well rested? What was my in-class engagement like? Do I feel good about that? Do I need to recalibrate something there, right? All of those really excellent reflective questions that, again, can turn a struggle or a failure into an opportunity for resilience, right? That's the magic, right? I said earlier it wasn't magic, but maybe, you know, that kind of is this special thing, right? Is reflecting on that. But again, it can be painful. And I know that. And so, you know, giving students, equipping them with even just the words to name it, like, I feel really disappointed right now, right? And then giving them some tools to reflect, and also just being, right, being present to do some of that work with them. And that's, you know, that's where, you know, our colleagues in student affairs, I think we can learn so much from them, but just being present with students while they work through that can be so impactful. So much of what I do in my office is just leading students through that reflection. And I'm not doing the hard work of that. That's all them, right? They are pulling, you know, pulling the weight there. I think as a, this is a big pronouncement, but I'm gonna go for it, Dana. as a culture, we're not great at reflecting. It's very.
I would second that.
Okay.
I'm with you on that. Generally speaking, we are. It's not. I don't think it's something that's wildly quiet. Reflection, nonetheless, is something that's really encouraged. There's so much distraction in our current situation.
That's so right. And so teaching students, pulling back the veil, right, on how to reflect. Students need to hear that, right? And so working with them on that, helping them rebuild their confidence, their sense of self-efficacy, working with them to build new skills and really helping them let go of the stigma. It's okay, right? It's okay to get to college and need to build some new skills, whether that's academically, or as I needed to build some new social skills in college. I also needed some academic ones, clearly, if anybody is, right, heard my story at the beginning. But I also needed some work to build some new social skills. So, you know, just normalizing that for students. It's okay to get here and not have it all right.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Yeah. Well, and as you were speaking, I was thinking of, you know, this idea of the work. I think this is a really important theme to kind of just linger on for just a minute, but that work that goes into, you know, I've had a setback, I've had a challenge or a failure, and then the idea of coming back from that, that space between those two points is really important. And, you know, like you said, you know, being there and helping students walk through that, it made me think, when you were talking, it made me think of Lisa Nunn's work on academic, on college belonging. And then she really breaks that down into different areas. And one of those areas is academic belonging. So when we think about, like, you know, it can be easy to dismiss that as faculty, as staff, as whoever, as a parent, as it's just one test, but that one test can be so symbolically meaningful to who they thought they were, right, to who they thought they were going to become in college, and to their sense of self as a student, and to their academic belonging, that sense of academic belonging that Lisa Nunn writes about in her book. And I've had her on a few times, and I really love her work because she focuses on first year students. And, you know, so they come in, you know, they can often come in with all of these ideas and ideals. And then, you know, it's really devastating if their experience doesn't match that, or even like your own situation where, and we've worked with enough students over the years together to know that students who are really good in high school, you know, are not always really good in college their first semester, but it's a skill set that they just have to learn how to, you know, adjust and hone. But that academic belonging is really, really key. It's not just that sense of, can I do this? It's kind of, do I belong here? So it has, the other thought I had was just like lots of ripple effects. And so, you know, journeying through that experience with students and you know, having people be knowledgeable on how to process that and teaching the reflection skills. Some students may naturally be reflective. We've had this conversation, even the differences between you and I. Some people are just more like jump into things, and other people do tend to step back and reflect more. And so, you know, certain students may need more encouragement in that area, but normalizing is really important. Journeying along through that process, like you said, I think is just a great point to highlight. So I'm trying to think about where I want to make sure we get to. Well, there's a couple questions I want to make sure we get to. So we kind of started to get into this a little bit, and so maybe I'll go here. But could you? What would you say are some of the? And we talked about this a little bit in our kind of our pre-conversation. The keys, some of the overarching keys to student success. I know when we were talking, you had mentioned like even the idea of openness. So when you think about that for students, then what are those keys that, and again, overarching, just generally speaking, that would be, you know, helpful to student success, for students to cultivate?
Sure. That's a good question. You know, I think, as you mentioned, we had talked a little bit about openness, and I think that is absolutely critical, right? College is this incredible, since I describe it, you know, as a sandbox, right? This sort of moment when you can play with ideas, play with even different identities, right? And so an openness to the experience, right? A wholehearted, whole self openness to what it might be, right? So, you know, that's certainly being open to new ideas and perspectives. That's being open to change and who you are, right? Being open to the joys of success and the pains and struggles of and lessons of failure, right? So a true openness to all it has to offer, and not, as you mentioned a moment ago, getting, you know, wrapped up in expectations about what you ought to be, who you ought to be, what this experience should be. You know, we know research, you know, tells us that many students are coming to college with the primary goal of a financial stability, right? Of career training, and that is a great reason to come to college. But it doesn't have to be only that, right? It can be that and being a part of an incredible residential community, that and experiencing a breadth of perspectives and opinions and lived experiences, right? And so, you know, whatever students are bringing with them, whatever framework they're bringing with them for what college should be, it could be that and other things, right? So I don't think we have to pressure students to sort of, you know, let go of this very, you know, this sort of more utilitarian vision of what is college for. That's okay. They can hang on to that even as we push them to be open to some other things too. You know, reflection is so critical. We've talked about this a little bit, and, you know, reflection after a moment of struggle or failure is really critical. But I cannot say strongly enough how important reflection is as you're moving through an experience before you even know whether it's going to be a success or a failure, right? So often the pace of college can just feel really frenzied. It can feel that way for those of us working in higher ed, right? It can certainly feel that way for our students who are taking, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 classes, right? 7 classes, you know, depending on the way their institution is structuring things. And so, gosh, that is a lot to be juggling at once, right? So for me to say, take some time to reflect, you know, in your day, that can sound really Pollyanna, but it's such a critically important investment. Because sometimes it's easy to get on autopilot, and the busier we are, the easier it becomes sometimes, right? To get on autopilot. This is the way I'm doing it. This is the way I study. So I'm going to pick up my things and I'm going to go to the library and I'm going to sit at this table and I am going to get out my books and I'm going to do, right? Not taking the time to notice that the library is actually, gosh, I can't get a thing done here because people are chatting with me or I'm getting distracted, right? Or, hey, you know, actually, if I start going back to my book, I fall into that trap of just rereading the chapter, right? And rereading, right, is not that's That's not a very strong study strategy. And so taking that time to reflect in the moment, say, is what I'm doing working for me? Does this feel effective? Am I bringing things into my week that fill me back up as I'm pouring out into my classes, into, you know, maybe my friends or my family or my job on or off campus, right? Am I doing things that fill me back up? Because, you know, if students get to the point that they're empty, right, they've got nothing left to give. So even just taking a moment to reflect on their own health and well-being is not just important for their health and well-being, right? It's important because you have to be well to be well and care for yourself to be able to commit the time and effort to your courses that you want to. So that reflection time is really important. And I think then the other things will follow, right? If changes need to be made to the way you're approaching your academics, you'll note that, right? And if you recognize something isn't working, hopefully your institution has some strong resources to brainstorm some new ways, right? If you're reflecting and you notice that the way you're managing your time throughout the week is making you very stressed, you can brainstorm different ways to do that. But really good reflection is sort of the seed of so many positive academic skills and strategies.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think that's really great. I'm thinking back to, like, you know, a lot of conversations we've had and even, you know, content that we've taught to students, it seems like a lot of times, you know, for some students, this is not the case at all. But for many students, it's kind of like, you know, I know a lot of students I worked with, it was just kind of like when I would ask the, why are you here? Like, what are you hoping to get? You know, aside from a good job, they really didn't have any other, you know, and again, like you said, that's not a bad thing, but it was just kind of like, you know, this idea, this, the bigger why of what do you want to get out of this? What are you hoping to, you know, what kind of experience are you hoping to craft? How do you want to be different? What experiences mm-hmm. do you want to have? What's the purpose? You know, because for a lot of students today, it's just like the next thing, right? It's right. The next thing. So taking time for that reflection before you get to college and then throughout. I think listeners know this about me too, as well. I've talked about this a lot. I'm a big process person. I just am a big process person of whatever that process looks like. I develop a process for writing papers. I develop a process for even preparing for my podcast. I have a whole process that I go through that I've found is effective for me. It is useful. But, you know, so I personally believe that a lot of success is just figuring out your process to mm-hmm. whatever it is you're doing. And that figuring that out does take, as you said, reflection. It's figuring out what works for you, what doesn't work for you, mm-hmm. what puts you in the headspace that you need to be in to study or to whatever. So I really, you know, it can seem very simple, but it maybe isn't easy and it maybe isn't common, but I would say it's probably quite effective. So I just wanted to kind of respond to that. I do want to make sure we get to, there's just one question I definitely wanted to make sure we get to. And we've kind of had some conversations around this previously too, but so I know in your position, you do get the opportunity to speak with different groups, specifically faculty, administrators, students, as well as parents. So, you know, with all of your experience and the knowledge you have, your work experience, your personal experience, and just the knowledge you have of the field and your work, what is your message to each of these groups? What is it that you say when you have the opportunity to stand in front of faculty and talk to them or in front of other administrators or when you're talking with students and then parents as well?
Sure. I'm glad you added parents. That's fantastic. So I'll start with faculty. So, you know, I had the privilege of speaking to a group of faculty at a course design sort of retreat a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, one of the things that I really stressed to them is, okay, it seems that many of us agree that building resilience in our students is a worthy goal, right? So how do we build that in to our courses? That, right, if we all agree that it's a worthy goal, right, and maybe we should all have a hand in building this, right, building a culture around this, how do we build that into our courses, into our syllabi? And so I think one of my messages there is, you know, incentivize, you know, building those skills around resilience, right? So we've talked a lot about reflection, but that it is such a critical piece of resilience. And you know, there's this really great book, Promoting Belonging, Growth Mindset, and Resilience to Foster Student Success. It's got these great just sort of sample reflection questions that faculty can pose to students after an exam, after an assignment, right? So, okay, yes, give those to students, but also incentivize their completion, right? Offer students a bit of extra credit or you know, a small piece of earned credit, right, on that assignment for completing these reflection questions meaningfully, of course, right? So do things in that vein, right? Think of ways to incentivize building the resilience you want to see in your students. And you know, certainly incentives are not the only way to build skills in students, but in a course where so much is grade-based, gosh, incentives sure are an effective and convenient tool to elicit the sorts of behaviors and create the sorts of habits you want in your students, right? And we do this all the time in classes, right? We train students to write an MLA or APA, right? And we put incentives around that. We count off points if they don't do it, or we give them points if they do, right? So what if we did this for resilience too, building the skills around that? You know, create some incentives for students to build in these areas, right? And also just take the time, again, just to walk with students through this. Ask them, you know, would you like to, in a judgment-free zone, sort of process the experience of this exam, right? Invite them into those conversations. And yes, there's a power dynamic there. Yes, some students may shrink from a conversation like that. But opening the door in a way that really demonstrates that you care about your student and that you want to have that type of conversation can be really meaningful. You know, and for those faculty who are teaching, you know, very large sections of courses, you know, find some partners on campus who may be willing to do that alongside you. You know, whatever your student success or kind of retention unit is on your campus, I bet there's some people there, right? Or academic advisors who can help lighten the load as you're again, inviting students into these conversations. For administrators, for folks who, right, are charting the course for institutions, I think, right, culture starts right at the top. So building a culture of valuing resilience. Right, asking your faculty to lean into that, asking your faculty to create space for that or incentivize it in as they build out their courses, right? But then also looking for opportunities to really demonstrate a commitment to resilience and to normalize failure. So one of the things we did at my institution is my area went around and we asked faculty, prominent faculty on campus, what you just write on this whiteboard a time that you failed, right? Just a time that you failed, right? And we went around and we had them hold it up and we took some video of that, right? And then we asked them to, on the other side, you know, write what they're really proud of about themselves today. And so some of them wrote, you know, something about their job or opening a new lab, right? Many of them, their initial failures were in a class in their field, right? So really, really taking ourselves off of the pedestal, right? Allowing space in the academy, right? For are we all very invested in academic excellence? Yes, yes, we are, right? Is that a straight, like some sort of like teleological straight line path from where we are now to success? No, that's not how any of this works, right? That's not how life works. Life's not a straight line. That's not how it's at, right? That's not how that works. And so just owning that, right? Owning that as we talk to students, as we talk to faculty, and letting that be part of our DNA. And then, as I was talking about earlier, putting, you know, showing up with policies, right? That allow students ways back to good academic standing, right? Ways back to success, not just in individual courses, but at an institution. And so, you know, that's, I will get off my soapbox now on. to students, I would say, you know, feel your feels. First of all, like just when you experience, you know, struggle or failure, just feel how you feel about it. Feel frustrated, feel mad, feel disappointed, feel sad, feel tired, feel energized, right? Wherever you are with that, just sit with that, right? And know that it's okay. Right, that it's okay to feel that way, and take a breath. And alongside that feeling, right, like you're not dismissing it, you're not pushing it deep down, right? You're allowing it to exist alongside some of these skills that we've been talking about. You're allowing that frustration maybe to exist alongside a commitment to building some new skills. So don't linger only in the feel your feels. Feel them, right? And also reflect. Feel them and also, you know, start thinking through, okay, what lessons am I taking away from that experience, this experience? What am I going to do differently next time? What support do I need, right? So not, you know, there are certainly moments when, you know, if a struggle or a failure is beyond our control, and just even saying that out loud, naming that, right? Like, this happened to me. It's really frustrating. And it wasn't something I could control. But I need to take some steps forward, and here are the resources I need to be able to do that. So, you know, seek out the professionals like myself, at your institution. I guarantee you, whatever we are doing at our desk, we'd much rather be working with you. You're not bothering us. We want to be sitting across from you. We are doing what we do. So we want to walk with you through your highs and your lows, the peaks and the valleys. We are here for you, and we care about you. So, you know, darken the door of people at your institution. For parents, I would say, you know, expect your student to experience struggle and failure, and help those of us at your student's institution who I hope are working to take away the stigma from that, right? Also be working on your parent side of things to be reducing the stigma around failure. We want your student to be successful. You want your student to be successful. Your student wants to be successful. Everyone, you're right. We're all working to the same end. But again, it's not going to be a straight line, right? And so, you know, is it good to hold your student accountable? Absolutely, right? So I think that's sometimes the first instinct to a struggle or a failure on the part of a student. Yes, that can be important, but mostly it's just allowing students to have those, you know, experiences of struggle and failure, and to reassure them that, hey, this is all right. You know, whether the class is just difficult or whether you totally messed up and did not, you know, only studied for 2 hours for an exam you should have studied 12 for, right? That's okay. This has happened, right? Again, feel how you feel, but let's think about where we go from here. So, you know, really, you know, help your student have, you know, assume both that posture of reflection and orient, you know, being eager to act on what they've taken away from this experience. But, you know, certainly, you know, even as it's scary, so I'll share that my son recently learned how to ride his bike, and it was a nervous wreck sort of watching him sort of ride off down this huge hill, and I wanted to be like, stop, no, don't do that, don't turn that way, don't. And so so I think, you know, if I project forward how I might feel when I see him face a struggle academically when he's older, and he's, you know, really, you know, he's only six now, so he gets, like, you know, thumbs up and thumbs down on a report card, right? But when it's later and he is really in a place of frustration or disappointment with an academic, I can see myself, you know, reacting to that with some panic, a little bit the same way I did when I saw him riding that bicycle. Like, I want to prevent every hardship. I want to fix everything for you because I, you know, worship you. So I know that I will have to really, to dial that down and understand that even stepping back and allowing him to experience that hardship, that's okay too. That is also my job as a parent, not just to prevent it, but to, again, walk with him through it. So I'm not saying any parents out there are doing that, preventing every, but I know that is something that would be easy for me to fall into. So,
it's a natural kind of instinct to want to do that, even if we don't do it or be inclined to do that. But yeah, I, I resonate with that as well. Thank you. I think too, the idea of, I love the normalize it. And if they can hear that from multiple places, and even just the new language around, you know, failure, that's a setback, or that it's an experience that didn't go how you expected.
Right.
But there's much to be gained and to be learned from that. And I'm having similar conversations in my house as well. I appreciate that perspective. And I think the more we can kind of share that across the institution, and that's where I think some of, you know, the recent scholarship that's come out is really, really good. And you know, the academic side, I love, because it can kind of bridge sometimes the different sides of the house. And like you said, I'm glad that you mentioned that we do have a lot to learn from student affairs folks. They have learned, they do know how to journey alongside students in this, in these other developmental ways, that might be new for faculty. And so I think, you know, I think some of the messages that you've shared are really, really wonderful, and speak to each of the areas kind of that we, you know, all the different areas of an institution. If we're all kind of doing our part in our own areas, how do we make that experience so much more valuable for students, and help them not feel so alone in that?
Right.
Because as you said, you know, acknowledging that there's a lot of feelings that go into that, you know, whether it's just a one test or a whole semester. And we've worked with students who have, you know, had to leave the institution and then are on their way back, or in some lots don't come back. So, you know, I think that, you know, that we have an opportunity, if we're all doing something in our own areas, to normalize this, to change the language, to change the culture, and to help students understand that this, as you said, and is very appropriate, is a natural part of life, like the human experience, right? So we are not setting students up for the rest of their lives very well if we don't help them understand that this is just how life goes, because college is not going to be the only time in your life where things don't go as you plan or expect. And so helping them and teaching them, giving them the tools for how to come back from an experience that doesn't go the way they plan, I think is one of the more invaluable lessons that they can take from our homes, our institutions, you know, wherever we're encountering students. So thank you for that. We're at time, so I'm just going to ask one last kind of question. Just briefly, if you could kind of share, you know, we don't get a chance to share the stories that really matter to us, or that have shaped our lives or put us on the paths we're on today. So if you could maybe briefly share one piece of advice you received that really impacted you.
So, you know, I have had the privilege of having a few great mentors. But yeah, I'm gonna interpret what you asked loosely, because
go for it.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So you know, I will never forget my first job in higher ed was my first professional position. Actually, it wasn't my first. My second professional position in higher education was when we were together, right at University of Kentucky, and I had a mentor in Dr. Jim Breslin. He's been on this podcast.
He's been on the show, yes.
Right.
He's also a good friend and colleague.
He is incredible. And Jim is someone who has this abiding faith in you as a person and as a professional. And it is contagious. So, you know, I think, you know, I was probably in over my head, right, when I became assistant director at University of Kentucky. And Jim would say, you got this. You can do – he always had these incredible brief messages of, you can do this. And, you know, as someone who, even at that point in my life, was still working to reconstruct my sense of self-efficacy, it wasn't a single piece of advice. It was the consistency that mattered, right? Mm-hmm. The constant, you can do this. right? Even when maybe I didn't need to hear it, but right, that ensured that when I did, like, it was there, right? That encouragement, that faith in me and who I was and what I could do was so meaningful. And that is something I hope I replicate with my own team of professional staff now. You know, I tell them all the time, you got this. Like, I believe in you. Whatever you decide, I will support you. And Danny, you may remember that one of the things he always said was, like, I will have your back. That's something that, that Jim says. And I find myself saying that to my staff all the time, because when you are in this field and you are making 1,000 judgment calls a day, or you're just, you know, adulting out in life, for there to be someone who consistently says, I got your back, that's incredible, right? That's hugely meaningful. And so, like I said, I interpreted that kind of loosely. It wasn't this one thing. It was actually that it wasn't this one thing, I think, that made it so meaningful. Yeah.
Well, it's a consistent message. It's this, well, I also feel like, yes, and I very much resonate with that. It's also this idea that you got this and I have you. So as your supervisor, as the person over you, like, you also feel like you can take risks. You can be creative. You can have support. You can fail. Exactly. You can try something that doesn't work, and that's okay. Like, we'll learn from it and move on and fix it and do better next time. You know, try something else.
That's right.
And so that's a great message. And the other thought that came to me as you were saying that was, and this is like a parenting thing, you know, I read something where it was something like, the things we say to our children become their inner dialogue. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I'm going to take that loosely and say that's the same thing when you're in a mentor position, at work or wherever in life, the things that you say and speak into other people's lives, like, that becomes their internal dialogue. So like you said, even when you didn't need to hear it, probably when you did, like, that voice was in your head, right? Like, you can do this.
That's right. That is exactly right.
It reminds me of, honestly, this last thing and then we got to end. But when I was learning to drive, my phys ed teacher, I still remember him, Mr. Clancy, and he would say, you know, turn on your signal, Dana. Like, he just had this really, like, a certain tone, and I would hear him walk me through all the steps, like, all the time. Yeah. And I heard his voice in my head the whole first year I was driving, because you hear that again and again in your head, because he would say it every time we got in the car together, just the different things that he would say to me. And I would hear it every time I got in the car. And so I think that's important. Like, what message are you sending, and the consistency of that message? And that speaks to what you were talking about, even with institutions. What that's message right. are we sending students, and you know, what are they taking away, and how can we change those messages if we need to, for a positive impact, for their success and their resilience, not just in college, but in life, as humans, doing this human experience with us all together. So, Anna, thank you so much for being on the show today, for sharing your experiences and your expertise on the role of quote unquote failure in student success.
Thanks for having me, Dana. This has been a blast.
It was a great conversation. Thank you. I'm Dr. Dana Malone. This is The Academic Life, and you've been listening to New Books Network. Please join us again.